Good morning and welcome to Backchat. I'm Philip Wong.
And I'm Rainbow Leung.
On today's program, we'll take a close look at the new measures that have been introduced to further boost Hong Kong's standing as a hub for top tech talent. An employer's representative and an immigration specialist will tell us how the latest policy address ensures the SAR's long-term development in terms of attracting, nurturing, and keeping talent.
After the break, we'll take a deep dive into a study on women's homelessness that was conducted by an NGO and a university. Representatives from these groups will explain how a holistic female co-living model can transform the rehabilitation process for vulnerable women.
And finally, we'll talk about the digitization of driver's licenses and how that would benefit motorists here.
As always, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Please do call us anytime at 233-88-266, WhatsApp 6899-8518, email backchat at rthk.hk, or comment on our Facebook page.
All right, and let's get cracking. Now, first of all, continuing on with our conversations on the policy address, which was last week. Today, we're going to put a spotlight on talent and immigration, in particular talking about attracting, nurturing, and keeping talents. Now, joining me and Rainbow to dissect this, we have right now Stephen Barnes, who is the co-founder of the Hong Kong Visa Center and author of the Hong Kong Visa Handbook. Good morning.
And a very good morning to you.
Thank you. Hope you're safe and well from the Typhoon Ragasa. Let's start with just asking about, you know, since the implementation of the top talent scheme, Stephen, that was around 2022, right? And the last policy address just last week, there were some enhancements into it. But I want to dive deeper into the original one, which was, like I said, 2022. How effective was it since then?
Well, that's a good question. The ultimate ability to judge its successfulness, I think, has been proven recently through the number of extensions that have been successfully completed, given that the initial period of 2 years that people under the Top Talent Pass were granted at the time of approval have come up for renewal. So the Immigration Department have gone through a decent renewal cycle now for the first cohort that got approved, and approximately 50% of them are remaining in Hong Kong. So it can be said that it's been, let's say, 50% successful.
Mm-hmm. Is that a good rate? To me, 50% doesn't sound terribly high. It sounds merely average. But what's your view on that?
Well, I think the program was sort of, in a sense, rushed to market post-COVID. And we have increasingly been competing with other jurisdictions. And the nature of the program when it first came out of the traps, and there's been some adjustments since then as the Immigration Department have gained experience with it. But as it came out of the traps, it was designed really to kind of enable those folks that wanted the option of Hong Kong to kind of have the option of Hong Kong at a very low cost. So we can kind of conclude that if half of the folks that originally got approved have stuck around and gone on to get extended, they've actively engaged in Hong Kong, and therefore the full intent behind the program has been satisfied, in fact. But for the other 50%, it's reasonable to assume that they've basically had it in their back pocket. They got the visa approved, easy enough, activated it, got the Hong Kong ID cards, but they never came to formally take up residence or join in the economy as the program was designed, you know, so to do.
Thank you. And also joining us right now is Roy Ying, who is the co-chair in Hong Kong Institute of Human Resources Management. Good morning, Roy.
Good morning. Hi. Sorry. It was a bit of a mess on the road, so sorry.
No worries. I can imagine it must have been a bit of an experience, given that we had a windy days the past couple of days.
I'm sorry, I lost track of the conversation. Is there anywhere I can chip in?
Well, of course, definitely. We were just talking, Roy, about, you know, the top talent scheme that was initially announced in 2022 and how successful was it. And we're just speaking to Stephen about it. But I do want to ask you, Roy, you know, in terms of the demand for the top talent scheme now, right? Is there a lot of demand for it? I mean, Stephen just mentioned that, you know, the rate is around 50%, right? And given that, is it still, you know, in high demand for, you know, utilizing the scheme?
I have to be honest with you. The different demands for different industry is ever-changing. When it was launched in 2022, there was a high demand across different sectors. And since then, technology has advanced, businesses has been undergoing transformation. There are some industries that are still high in demand, some are not so much. For example, technology, AI, these are still very much high in demand for the jobs under the top, under the talent list. Those are still high, very much high in demand. And so I cannot give you a good answer, but judging from the government's announcements of 54% of the top talent scheme people were able to renew visa, we know that there is at least over 100,000 people who managed to find employment. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been able to renew their visa.
What about the impact on, you know, the economy so far, Roy? I mean, I note that, you know, you mentioned that, you know, it's different across different sectors. But then overall, when we're looking at the economy in Hong Kong, it must have been like a positive impact so far, right?
Well, first of all, let's look at the way they can contribute to the Hong Kong economy. Number one, they have to pay tax. That's number one. Number two, judging from the numbers that we see from the dependents, that they family basically that they are bringing over to Hong Kong, it's beneficial to schools, a little bit to the university, and also the residential housing rental market, and that those are the immediate impact. And so for obviously when these people they come to Hong Kong, they have employment for now, but I would believe that some of them will want to venture themselves into becoming their business, their, you know, starting their own company. And by then, perhaps maybe we'll see additional employment. So these are what I am seeing right now. And hopefully, if the government is it can do a more targeted job in promoting the top talent scheme, the impact might be even be more focused.
However, Roy, just to continue that train of thought, there are claims. I mean, there's criticism that actually, you know, a portion of those on the top talent visa scheme do not contribute to the Hong Kong's economy in the mid to long term because, you know, a proportion of them do not stay in Hong Kong but simply return to the home country, in particular China, after getting their Hong Kong ID. So there might be a short-term sort of like uplift in contribution, but nothing mid to long-term. What would you say to that?
April, I believe what you're referring to is people who are able to stay in Hong Kong for 7 years and then they are able to get their Hong Kong ID. Are you referring to those? Because if they are able to get a job for 7 years and then get their Hong Kong ID card, I believe they just over that course of period of time, it's a substantial investment in Hong Kong for them to stay here. So I would imagine there might be some people like that, but if they are able to come through the Hong Kong, the top talent scheme, stay for 7 years and then get the Hong Kong PR, I guess they've done their fair share. However, I do agree with one point you mentioned. Remember we talked about only 54% of the people who came through the top talent scheme visa did renew. That means 46% did not renew and they returned to wherever they come from. And you're rightly to say that it's mainly from China. And that's because the way the scheme is designed, there's no need for them to first get a job before they come to Hong Kong. And there wasn't really an industry or job specific or any orientation in terms of how, you know, any preference on the approval process. I believe that there could be some thinking about it in terms of how our future effort in promoting a top talent scheme can be conducted. That is something that we've been the institute has been advocating. Although we may not want to see drastic changes, but at least in terms of promotion, spend the promotional effort where we most need it. That might be a better use of our resources.
Now, Roy, I know you have to go very soon. You have a very busy schedule. But before you go, I do want your thoughts on a topic on nurturing talents, because that's one of the things that the CE did address in last week's policy address. I mean, what are your thoughts on his policies on those areas?
First of all, AI is certainly something that we agree on. I believe I actually do some counting. He mentioned the word AI 64 times in his policy address. Thanks to AI, I was able to count that. and in particular, there are two things that I have in mind. Number one, education is obviously something that I agree on. You know, my job, I'm in the university, and that really forces investments in terms of the hardware, software, and more importantly, there were colleagues who are near retirement. They now have no choice but to learn, because many people in the past 2 years, they know AI is happening, but the motivation of learning is not as high as we are. So now they are now in a position that they have to learn. That's number one. And number two, the government is leading by example. Now, when government is leading by example, that means the organization that that do business with the government or have to seek approval or submission to government, they all have to synchronize and they all have to upgrade themselves. So it's creating not just government's investment, but it also has a spillover effect, a ripple effect into the private sector. And I'm seeing quite a lot of positive changes anticipated. However, the kind of training that is available in the market, a lot of it is English-based. I believe that if there has to be a more widespread impact, I would encourage more local institutions, content provider, to come up with locally relevant content, preferably in Chinese, Cantonese. And that would be really helpful.
Thank you very much, Roy, for your sharing your thoughts. And everyone, that was Roy Ying, co-chair of Hong Kong Institute of Human Resources Management. Now, Stephen, just going over back to you, we did, touch with Roy about, the demand for it, right? What are your thoughts on this as well? Like, do you see there is still like a high demand to utilize this scheme? And, is it the right direction that, we are focusing on, certain industries such as IT?
Well, the Top Talent Pass itself doesn't focus on any particular type of talent other than the fact that they've graduated from one of the basically 200 leading education institutions in the world, or they've earned $2.5 million Hong Kong dollars in the 12 months immediately prior to applying. So it's kind of like ascribing the talent, the value of the talent in the quantum of income that they earn or where they graduated, where they got their formal education from. So from that perspective, it's kind of like neutral as regards what kind of qualities these talents possess. But is it a good program? I think it's a great program, because prior to this program, there was very much a gap in the immigration sort of service scope to avail immigration status to foreign nationals or indeed, our Chinese cousins to come and contribute to Hong Kong's economy. Prior to the introduction of this program, it was always sort of hung or status was available to, I should say, those folks who already had job offers or had, firm business plans to join in the economy as entrepreneurs. Given also that we are competing with every other major jurisdiction for these types of talents, if we were to stop this program, then we'd be going back to the bad old days, and these talents would principally beat a path elsewhere where it's easier to get immigration status to be able, to contribute accordingly. So I think it's good. Is it fit for purpose? Yeah, it is. I mean, there's some adjustments that have been made in the wake of what was a bit of a hasty introduction. The Immigration Department picked up on some of the shortcomings pretty quickly and made adjustments. For example, verification of qualifications claimed is now compulsory to have those verified through the issuing institutions. At the point of the program being introduced, that wasn't the case. And so we've seen some high-profile instances of prosecutions led by the Immigration Department to dig out these bad actors. But in the final analysis, the program has sort of, you know, bent with the wind, as it were, as the Immigration Department have, you know, figured out kind of like, you know, what the dynamics of the experience are for service users and those people that apply, and they've risen to the challenge. So I think it's good for us, because if we didn't have it, we'd be a lot worse off.
Stephen, I want to come back to your the observation you made that the talent scheme itself, by definition, is by its current definition, is open-ended. Because there is, again, criticism that because of that, there is talent mismatch between demand and you know, demand and supply, you know, between talent coming in and employers who are looking. What's your experience of this?
Well, I think it's a question of who's responsible for determining what shortages of talent there are at the top end of town. Is that the role of government, or is it something that the market should ultimately decide? So the governments have been smart in saying, look, if you're a high earner, or you've graduated from one of these, you know, leading institutions, irrespective of what your plans might be after you arrive in Hong Kong, we want you. And I think, you know, free market economics suggests that that's the only way to do it.
I mean, Stephen, I do want to, you know, pick your brain on this, because, well, last week we did have a topic in regards to Hong Kong now ranking fourth globally, you know, for attracting talent. And my question back then to the guests there was, how do we improve? How do we make sure that we're third, second, or even first? What are your thoughts on this in terms of refining the method to attract talent, but also in terms of retention as well? Because you mentioned that there is currently like a 50% retention rate.
So I don't know whether, well, let me put it this way. We know there's a 50% retention rate because at least, say, 50% of folks were not in a position to actually extend their visas, because to get an extension, you needed to show that you were gainfully employed by a well-established business in Hong Kong, or you'd established a, quote, sizable business of your own in Hong Kong. So, you know, the whole sort of ethos behind the program generally stated has been satisfied to the extent that 50% of the folks who had or who have had the visa have actually gone on to start their own businesses and have gone on to get full-time employment and have stayed in Hong Kong. What I've seen, which has been interesting from a professional practice perspective, given they've been doing this for 30 years or more now, is the way that the Immigration Department approached the extensions of stay for those folks who had started their own businesses. Because there are other immigration programs that avail the ability for foreign nationals to start their own businesses in Hong Kong. And there's a requirement to demonstrate that the enterprise that you've created is, quote, contributing substantially to the economy of Hong Kong, unquote, in order to get the extension. So what I've seen in terms of the extensions for those applicants who have started their own businesses, most of them haven't started sizable businesses yet, but they've, you know, taken concrete sort of steps forward to, you know, create the conditions for those businesses to grow. And because it's the entrepreneurial ethos that's sort of driving, you know, the decisions to start their own businesses and to obviously seek to grow, I haven't seen the Immigration Department penalise anyone who has clearly started a business that's moving forward that might not have created any local jobs by the time the extension first came up. But they're generating revenues, they're contributing, you know, to the economy of Hong Kong more widely by virtue of the fact that they are operating a business. So my perception is that for the most part, those extensions that have been granted to the entrepreneurial class have been granted, even though, you know, they may not be rocket ship type businesses at the moment, but hold the potential to, and folks have been given the benefit of the doubt. So from that perspective, I think it's working.
Stephen, I'm actually quite interested that from the visas that applications that you handle and the renewals that you've done, what proportion are entrepreneurs and what proportions are for people who are looking for jobs?
80-20.
80 entrepreneurs.
20% entrepreneurs, 80% full-time employees.
Right.
Wow. Stephen, I do want to ask you, I do want to go a little bit international. You are a visa expert. As you know, I'm sure you know, last week, President Donald Trump talked about the H-1B visa, where everyone and new applicants, they're being charged $100,000. My question for you is, why?
Well, it's Trump. It's irrational. It's why is he putting you know, ad hoc tariffs on everybody? I think he wakes up in the morning and thinks, okay, what's a really good idea for me to be able to do something populist and actually at the same time create chaos to keep everybody on their toes? I mean, it's unprecedented to expect that a program like the H-1B, which is kind of like the it's for those folks who possess skills that can't be found in the US. It's irrational to expect that anyone that is going to seek to employ any new party under the H-1B program is going to chip in $100,000. It's just a showstopper. So it's irrational.
I mean, exactly. I mean, like, I don't even foresee like anyone, like even the big companies, you know, considering hiring talent, even on C level, when it's like the price is so high.
You should have just abandoned the program for all practical purposes.
Well,
it's better to be able to say, oh, well, you know, we issued 20,000 under the cap last year. And I don't know about US immigration. I don't really know about Hong Kong, to be honest. Mm. But, you know, it's better to say, look, you know, we had 20,000 applicants last year. We've got folks like Microsoft and Google and all the Silicon Valley outfits that are using this program, you know, to keep jobs for Americans at bay. Well, if they want to import these talents, let them pay $100,000. But actually, no one's going to pay it. They'll just go somewhere else. So from a kind of a, you know, in the benefit of, you know, American employees' perspective, it's a stroke of genius. Mm. But really, it's political theatre to charge $100,000 for new H-1Bs. You should just cancel the program.
Well, on that note, I do want to ask you because, you know, obviously with the, you know, new H-1B visa, you know, cost, there are talks about, you know, Canada taking advantage of this. But what about here in Hong Kong? Are there any ways where, you know, here in Hong Kong we can take advantage of this?
Well, just do what we're doing now, which is, you know, to keep the doors open under the existing policy construct for the top talent pass and encourage people to apply.
That being said, though, Stephen, I mean, Hong Kong does face competition with this top talent scheme. You know, Singapore has its one pass, is it called one pass scheme or something? And many other jurisdictions also. So what can Hong Kong do to improve or fine tune the current program to sort of like improve the ratio of new applications and to improve, you know, the renewal percentage?
Well, I don't think there's anything in the way the programs are designed that would make any significant enhancement per se. In fairness, the Immigration Department, you know, they do a pretty good job all told, but, you know, they can be subject to criticism, validly so. And a couple of criticisms that emerge from my profession is that the way that the Top Talent Pass unit has been set up over in, you know, New Chung Kwan headquarters, they're kind of hermetically sealed. It's very difficult to speak to anybody that's kind of responsible for administering the programs. And also, and I think it's a confluence of national security implications as well, what's being sort of represented as a four-week application process is in actual fact a 12 to sort of 14 or 16-week application process. Now, that's probably down to, you know, diligence, as I say, at the back end in relation to protecting national security, reasonably so. But ultimately, if the Immigration Department are representing to the world that, you know, 4 weeks is the timeline upon receipt of all information, but don't actually explain how much time it's going to take for all the information to be procured before the entry into the four-week consideration window, they're kind of like missetting expectations for service users as to how quickly they can get to Hong Kong, anticipating that, you know, the policy criteria for approval are pretty transparent and easy enough to attain. But there's a certain frustration, and I've encountered this with more than a few clients, that, you know, they've come and they've said, you know, I'm getting all of this Google advertisement sort of coming across my computer telling me that Hong Kong is open for business, and it's only going to take 4 weeks. But here I am, week 10, week 11, you know, got everything on standby at home, ready to hand my notice in so I can come to Hong Kong. Family looking at, you know, schools, but not being able to plan properly so that we can get into, get the school, get the kids into school at the requisite, you know, time that, you know, term starts and the like. So I think there's improvements from a service user perspective. But as regards fitness for purpose, I think it's pretty much on the money.
Well, thank you very much, Stephen, for joining us today to talk about talent here in Hong Kong. That was Stephen Barnes, co-founder of the Hong Kong Visa Center and author of the Hong Kong Visa Handbook. All right, now it's 9:30 right now, and we're just approaching time for the news. But first of all, some weather forecasts, okay? So right now, it is standby signal number one, and today it's mainly cloudy with occasional squally showers and thunderstorms. Showers will be heavier in some areas at first. Maximum temperature will be around 30 degrees during the day. Moderate to fresh east to southeasterly winds with occasionally strong offshore and on high ground. Seas will be rough and swells. And looking at the outlook, weather will improve with showers easing off in the next couple of days, sunny intervals, and a few showers early next week. And now it's time for the news.